Hey, I'm Kit Clever from Skilltree, and I'm a maker figuring it out.
Welcome to Makers Figuring It Out, a show where we strive to educate, motivate, inspire makers of all skill levels with special guests, makers, tips and tricks, do's and don'ts, and many things in between. I'm Steve Huber from Wolf Woodworking Creations, and joining me for a second week in a row is Scott from Dad It Yourself DIY. How are you doing, Scott?
Good, Steve. How are you doing?
Oh, I can't complain. Jacob is he's on assignment. Let's put it that way.
Is he in Rwanda with Ethan Carter?
Yeah, he and Ethan are, you know, dancing around you that place that you just said that I can't. My brain's not working right well because I just woke up.
I know that Vince always says when Ethan's not available, he's in Rwanda.
Oh, my God. I seriously thought he was in Rwanda. Seriously, because he was saying that he was doing relief work and things like that. And exactly. I was like, oh, that sounds about right. So he's not really in Rwanda.
He's not really in Rwanda. No, I don't think Rwanda's even a country anymore. Is it?
I don't know. That's why I was just like, all right, fine.
I think it became like Zimbabwe or something.
You know, he could have said he's from Saskatchewan. He could be saying, I mean, Saskatchewan or something.
That's funny.
The only place that I would have been like, yeah, that's kind of weird. It's like, you know, I'm down in the South Pole doing missionary work. All right. That doesn't make sense. Yeah. But yeah. So,
but yeah. Scott, thanks for having me again this week.
No problem. Thanks for filling in for Jacob.
A lot of fun.
Jacob, once again, he is at work doing what he does for a living. And unfortunately, that conflicted with doing what he does for enjoyment.
Mm-hmm.
So. But we do have a guest this week again. I got a big guy this time. He likes to use his body to measure things, which is really strange. You know what I'm talking about, don't you, Scott?
Yeah, is it like what do they call that, a snoop or a stook? They had a guy at Harvard a couple of years ago that they actually used his body as a measurement for this bridge that goes over the Charles River. I want to say it's a snook or something like that. But yeah, I'm familiar with Caleb using his body for scale.
Yeah. And so we have Caleb from You Can Make This Too. Hello, Caleb.
Yes, I'm here. Thanks for having me tonight, gentlemen.
Thanks for making it. Sorry about the little delay. Some people can't wake up from naps, supposedly.
Well, no, that's worries. What old people do, isn't it?
Some of us wish we had more time for naps.
Oh, man. I don't know why. I was just so tired today. So, but enough about me, more about Caleb. So, Caleb, how are you?
I'm doing well. How are you tonight, Steve? Okay. Well, I guess you already answered that for Scott. But
yeah. I pretty much did.
I'm good. Yeah. I'm good.
Good. Good.
It's well rested.
How's the new shop treating you?
A lot better than I'm treating it. I'll say that. But yeah, it's amazing. Yeah, we've been putting it through its paces. I have a lot of empty cabinets working with Home Depot and Husky. Got a bunch of cabinets a few months ago. Still not full. Still piles of tools. One of these days, hopefully things slow down. I can actually use some of the organization we have around here. Got a bunch of plans. Still have a brand new 2-stage 80 horsepower or 80 gallon. Air compressor on the other side of the shop. I haven't hooked to electricity or airlines yet.
Totally. Nope.
I keep thinking like, I'm going to do this next week. Then next week turns to next week, turns to next week, turns to next week. So, but as long as people are paying me to make furniture, you know, I'm happy.
Well, you are making things. So gotta go with the flow. You gotta keep the money flowing.
You exactly. That's always the challenge in the shop is how much time do you spend working in the shop versus on the shop? And whether that's if it's as a hobby or a career, I think that's always a tough thing to figure out.
Yeah. So how did it go with moving from your previous shop to this shop? And by that, I mean, I know you packed up boxes and moved them from one place to the other, but I meant, that time, the transition time, did you take time off from building the furniture or did you just keep going and build a bunch of stuff ahead of time? And
you know, yeah, fortunately, it worked out where I had a little bit of a lull. I tend to forecast out my furniture just to give myself flexibility and account for the unknown, because I've learned that the unknown is a known. There's always going to be something that comes up that ruins every plan you have. So just give yourself way more time than you think you're going to need for everything. And that tends to work out about right. So if I think someone's going to take me a month, I try to say two or three, and I normally hit that. So as expected, the shop unexpectedly took a lot longer than I had planned for it. I was thinking it would take about 2 months to turn this horse barn into a shop. It was, for those not familiar, which probably a lot of people, it was just, I'm in a 36 by 36 pole barn that was a horse barn. So when I moved here, there was a few walls. A portion of it still had dirt floors and stalls and a few walls. There was a tack room. But otherwise, you know, 6x6 posts, purlins, and metal on the outside was what we had.
Cool.
So we came in, gutted everything, sprayed in 3 inches of closed cell foam everywhere, demoed all the walls and the stalls, excavated where the dirt was, put in a base course and rebar, and by hand mixed 3 yards of concrete. That was about 12,000 pounds,
holy,
I think, is what it came out to be. That was pretty ridiculous. That was quite the day. And then I did 4 inches of fiberglass bat on the ceiling on top of the 3 inches of foam, and then a burlap treatment. That's my acoustic treatment to get everything quiet. And then framed everything out. I got some local rough-sawn poplar from a sawyer. That was one of his first runs of material he ever did that he figured wasn't suitable for anyone to buy. So he sold it to me pretty cheap because it wasn't really great to try to use his furniture. It wasn't very consistent, but as wall material, it'd be great. So, you know, if you're watching the video, that's what you can see behind me and seen in my videos. And then Home Depot Husky hooked me up with this awesome floor that I laid down. I put into 15,000 BTU mini split units. The big sliding doors, I insulated those as well and wrapped them up, painted all the trusses, put in a 200 amp dedicated service and ran all the electrical. So every machine I have is on a dedicated circuit. Every wall has AB outlets on split circuits. So I've never tripped a breaker in here. Got a couple drop cords. It's kind of the ideal dream shop. If I was going to build a building, I was thinking of building about 40 by 60. So this is a little smaller than that. But as far as my wood shop, it's kind of the perfect size where I have plenty of room to have enough infeed and outfeed for my machines and keep them close and still give myself plenty of flex space for just whatever I'm working on. Because I want to say probably about half the shop is taking up with fixed machinery, leaving half of it open to just saw horses. And I've got some mobile work tables on wheels that whatever I'm working on, I can just kind of move around. Everything's set up in a nice flow where material can come into the shop. And then I can run through a milling process where everything zigzags through the jointer, planer, table saw, and ends right in front of my assembly table, and then moves over into the open floor space where I can do finish work, which is also right by the door where it came in, and go right back out on the truck for delivery. I think, and that doesn't sound like a lot, but yeah, that was 4 months of work. And then the tack room, I turned into the office, so we gutted that. Put fiberglass over the foam as well for sound control, sheetrocked it in, painted it, added electrical. So I sort of have a little clean room where I've got my sit to stand desk and computer, some more cabinets, a slop sink, mini fridge for water and beverages of choice while working. And yeah, it's kind of a dream environment, but I thought that would take about 2 months. It ended up taking me about 3 to 4. There was some time in there I felt like I was never, ever going to woodwork again, and I'd forever be working on the shop and never in it again. We finally got through that. Fortunately, I had a few commissions that were supposed to be due around Christmas, but all the clients actually pushed the timeline of their own accord. I did have one project that came in a few weeks later than I wanted to, but they were fine with it. I kept them up to date. So fortunately, everything kind of worked out on its own that I was able to, you know, give the shop all the time it needed. And nothing. So there was no like, oh, I built a bunch of stuff ahead of time and I was going to do content on the shop. So all my videos in that time were, hey, today I'm putting in, mixing a lot of concrete. And this time I'm cutting a hole in the wall and installing a man door. Or here's how much I hated my spray foam contractors, or putting up all the rough sawn poplar or laying the floor, just putting in the mini splits, doing electrical, you know, whatever the project was, is what the video was.
Yeah, Caleb, you already answered the question that I had about the, you know, wall treatment, because I've been trying to keep up with Instagram as much as possible. And so pretty much it's kind of, it's not really difficult, but I don't know. I'm just lazy sometimes and don't want to.
It takes a lot of time to stay on top of it.
Like, it does. And so, I mean, some of the last things that I saw you do were the Caleb size everything. The big, huge table you were making. And I was just like, that's hilarious. Then you had that little one. And I'm like,
It was just a random thought on a table, because I hadn't been posting on Instagram. I was like, oh, I should post about this giant tabletop we're making. And I was like, oh, this would be funny, man, get a picture of this. And I laid on it and everyone loved it. And then I did it a few more times and everyone kept loving it. And I was like, well, if everyone likes it, I'll give the people what they want. That's part of my job, I guess. So as long as it's, you know, not illegal, immoral, or unethical, and I don't think Caleb for scale is, then
I don't think so.
Keep,
I mean,
doing it. So
maybe in Rwanda it is. I'm not sure. Yeah,
maybe.
So, you know, I've been following you on YouTube, decided that I like your content. So it keeps it up at the top of my my feed. So I've been following you along as you've been going.
Well, and, awesome. Thank you. You and like 20 other people, I think.
There's only just 20 of us.
That's great. Great to meet one of you. You're in a small group that YouTube tells I make videos.
I'm not in that group.
I did realize, I was like, oh, you know, it's like you said, you've been working on it like 3 months. And I'm like, oh, it's been like 3 months. And I started looking back and I realized, now you moved in like October or November, didn't you?
Yeah, the first of November. Yeah, the first week of November I spent painting here. And then we moved whatever the first weekend, like real weekend of November was. Because I want to say we closed the last day of October, took the weekend, and the next week I painted. Then we moved.
Now,
and
you moved from right Tennessee to Mississippi, but you're really still in the Memphis kind of metropolitan area, correct?
Yeah. Yeah. So Memphis, where I was, is a tri-state area. Basically, it's down in the southwest corner of Tennessee, and it borders Arkansas across the Mississippi River. And then if you just, you know, drive south instead, you'll basically drive from Memphis into South Haven or Olive Branch, depending on where you are, in Memphis or Germantown. They're all just, you know, outliers of Memphis, and never even realized you've left a city or crossed a state line. So I'm more rural now, a little outside that, but essentially still the greater Memphis area, just happened to cross the state line.
Which is nice, because you don't have to rebuild your customer base.
Exactly. Yeah. So same customer base. I had to technically dissolve my business and start a new business and all kinds of crazy legal stuff. And
now you're,
you know, state lines, all the things state managed. But yeah, I mean,
you probably want to redo your barn again, then do all that paperwork.
Yeah.
That was probably the worst part of it. Paperwork always is.
Yeah. And even with a law degree, whenever I mess with that stuff, I'm still always like, is the state going to come after me in like 5 years and say, you screwed this up? Where's our money? And I don't know. So,
well, the whole thing too is, like, when I was setting up my business, it's like, it's a domino. You have to find that first domino. And then once you figure out, like in Washington, I had to get my fictitious business name first. And then it was like, boom, 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 all the way through the contractor's license. And it's like, and if you did one out of order, it was like, they're like, well, we need this, go back to B or something like that. And I'm sure Tennessee does it differently than Mississippi did it.
Oh, everyone does it different. Yeah. Everyone. And what's kind of nice is Mississippi actually is one of like 20 states that has a program where I forget the name of it, but you can basically transfer an LLC into the state, but Tennessee isn't. So even though Mississippi lets you move an LLC into the state and just do a handoff, Tennessee doesn't recognize that. So it's like, oh, well, had to dissolve and restart. So is what it is. No big deal.
So basically you went out of business and then restarted your business.
Yeah, exactly. Which is the weird thing, because it's like I've been in business for almost 5 years, but also only 7 months. So.
Right.
So did you do the clean break at the end of your calendar/fiscal year? So it was easier for accounting and all that.
Yeah. For accounting, which I'm not totally, which I mean, I wasn't closing any deals at the end of the year anyways, because everything was on hold. But yeah, I just did everything as a hard stop at the end of the calendar year. And
that's nice.
Then
that's
started
a, that's
everything
a good
up.
Piece of advice for since,
since
it, that's
since everything ended that way, I was like, I'm just going to treat this as if everything ends in at the end of December, and had a new bank account and everything ready for Mississippi, and started using all that January 1, rolled everything over.
So Bruce Ulrich is doing something similar this right now, isn't he? He's going from Mississippi to Kentucky, if I remember.
Correct. Yeah. Yeah. He's heading up to Kentucky. So he's
going
to have
to August
go through all that as well. Yeah. And he's in the middle of the year, so there's no playing. You just got to embrace all that when it comes tax time.
Actually,
two sets of taxes.
Actually, I don't know if he does, because I think in some cases, if you've only lived in that state for 6 months or less than 6 months, you don't have to pay anything to that state, but you got to pay everything back to the old state.
I don't know. I think states are really good at collecting their sales tax.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that was pretty much because I just got my real estate tax in, mm-hmm. and it says on there, if you have moved out of the area within the last 6 months or after the last 6 months, you know, more than 6 months from now, then you don't have to pay the taxes for here, because you're getting it someplace else. So I was like, but unfortunately I moved here in December, so I, for some reason, had to pay everything.
Yeah. Of course, that's all different between if it's like your privilege tax for having, you know, a license for a specialized career like that versus, you know, business or corporate taxes or state income taxes.
Yeah. You know, they waived my tax for, they call it, what is it called? We call it the occupation tax up here. And it's usually $10. It was $10 a month. And pretty much most of us just say it's the privilege of working tax. Everybody pays it. If you're working, you pay it. Doesn't matter how much you make, how much or how little, you pay the 10 bucks and it's, I didn't, because I technically am not making anything, because they don't count my pension. They don't count my disability. So I'm like, oh, cool. Could you do that for my, the real estate tax also? Because that would be awesome. And they're like, no. And I'm like, oh, crap.
Caleb, you caught my shirt, right?
Oh, very nice.
T-shirt Tuesday, man.
Awesome.
I have to shout you out on Instagram later.
Way to rep. Thank you.
You gave me this shirt at WorkbenchCon in 2020.
Okay.
Wait a minute.
You and I were chatting in the bar.
I met you and I didn't get shit. That's it. He's off.
I mean, cut him off. Don't talk to me if my hands aren't full. What can I say? I mean, if I got stuff, I'll give it away. If I don't.
Okay. I'll get mine the old fashioned way. Beg and borrow.
Yeah, so I think I gave a stack of them to Calavera Tools, and he gave them away to everybody.
That's where I got it.
I
had a bunch of shirts. Yeah,
he was standing up.
He was doing the big giveaway, and I was like, "Hey, here's a bunch of shirts. Just have fun, man."
Yeah, and I'm just.
And it was my size too. I caught perfect. My size, which was perfect. Awesome.
I would never catch my size.
Yeah, he was having a blast throwing stuff at people. I was like, "Hey, here's more stuff to throw."
I remember that. I was standing right there at the stairs, going, "What is this dude throwing?" Oh,
I think we probably did more networking in that 100 square foot area of that hotel that weekend than the rest of the convention combined.
Oh, that's what those events are always about. I mean, the classes are good and it's always great to meet sponsors. But it's just the one-on-one connections, and all the time in the breaks, the breakout time, and then before hours and after hours, like it technically starts, you know, Thursday afternoon or whatever, but really like Wednesday night and Saturday night, those times outside of everything officially happening, that's the best quality time you get with everyone and the most out of it.
Well, because you're not, it's not formal, it's informal. So you hop from table to table and you mingle.
Yeah.
And, you know, as you get drunk, and some people got more drunk than others, but dang. So, I was not one of them for once.
Personal choices to be made for sure.
Yeah.
Are you planning on heading down there in February?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
Can't miss it. I think it's going to be even bigger now than it was in 2020.
We have like an extra year to catch up.
Yeah. Well, the great thing about WorkbenchCon was not only did I get to meet some of the people that I saw on YouTube, I got to meet some people like Caleb that I didn't even know existed, you know, and it, so it was kind of funny for me because I met Caleb. I mean, hell, I met Caleb. I met Justin from Bear Make It. I met Nick from Build That Build. And I'm looking at Bill, and I, when I met Nick, I'm like, hey, so what's your channel? He goes, ah, and I'm thinking, you know, he's brand new. So I get up, you know, I get up to the hotel room, and of course you look up everybody, and I'm like, oh shit, he's been doing this for a while and he's got, you know, 50,000 subscribers. Holy shit. You know, and I'm like, oh, I was talking to a big deal. And, you know, but that's the one thing. Nobody's really a big deal there. I mean,
we're all just people. Some of us doing it longer, some of us doing it shorter.
I mean,
some of us just thinking about it.
Yeah. I mean, just
guys who like to make stuff.
We had Mark's bag, I can't even pronounce his last name.
Mark Spagnolo.
Spagnolo. We had him. We had Ann, Brad Rodriguez was there. And those are kind of like the stars. I mean, the big, you know, big names have been doing this for a while. And, you know, as soon as I saw them, I was like, you know, and I'm like, oh, I don't want to bother them or anything like that. And so I kind of like, I did a candid picture with Mark and just took it. And he was in the background doing the same exact pose that I was. It was great. Because I didn't want to, you know, bother them because, you know, they're talking, they may be talking shop. And can't do that because, you know.
Probably not.
Yeah, I'm just looking forward to going back now that I know everybody, you know. Like, that was my first year, so I was just, like, fanboying for a while and then kind of just getting to know people. So going back now that I've made all these friends and have these connections. And, you know, I was, like, I was small YouTuber back then. I actually crossed the 1,000 mark at WorkbenchCon.
Oh, that congrats. Weekend. That's awesome.
Yeah, that was cool. And then it's like, you know, it's been 2 years now. And I wasn't even, I'm one of those guys that went YouTube first, Instagram second. So I'm still kind of going up the Instagram ladder, but it was, I just can't wait. I mean, I just can't wait to go down there.
Okay. Oh, good. Go ahead, Scott.
No, go ahead.
Okay. So Caleb, have you been a woodworker your entire life? Well, besides, no, actually you were a lawyer. I forgot about that. You did mention that earlier.
You went to law school. I went to law school, never been a practicing attorney, never sat at the bar.
Gotcha.
But I grew up in what I call the perpetually remodeled house. If you grew up in one, you know exactly what I'm talking about. There was always something going on. And when I moved out, there was still lots of things that needed to be done. So I just grew up comfortable around tools, had a lot of uncles who were contractors, and in my teen years, spent a lot of time working for them, learning then how to do things the right way. But I didn't get an interest in actual woodworking until after college, when I was in the military, right before I went to Afghanistan. I just kind of took an interest to it while I was in Germany. We needed a few little tables. Talked to my landlord. He let me borrow his tools and made a few things that we just needed for the house. And that really got my interest. It's like, you know, this would be a lot of fun. I want to make stuff again. I was an engineer when I was in the Army, because I was one of the things that was under the engineer branch is construction, but I ended up in a combat unit, which was also fun because then you play with explosives instead. And that was great, but I wanted to scratch that building itch. So getting ready to go to Afghanistan, I got all the fine woodworking and popular woodworking magazines I could. That was how I filled my downtime. And as soon as I got back, set up my first wood shop and was just kind of self-taught. That was back in 2012. So been doing it since then. So almost 10 years now. But so then the military, my exit plan out of the military was I wanted to run my own business, and I thought law might be an avenue for that, just because I got very, very close to a few attorneys and spent a long time in that world. And that seemed like a way to continue the skill set I'd learned as an Army officer. And then the longer I was in law school, the more I realized that probably wasn't going to offer the work-life balance that I wanted. And then I also discovered content creation as a career path. So started my YouTube about midway through law school, because I also just needed to get out of my head, because law school, man, it'll make you very, very neurotic. Everything's just in your head. It's like, I just need to touch stuff and make things again. So I did that, found the community, fell in love with it. It was like, you know what? I'm going to give this a shot. I feel like if it'll work, it's going to give me what I want out of my business a whole lot better than a career in law would. And, you know, I've got a year and a half to see if it works. And if it works, I'm going to do this. And if it doesn't, I guess I'll graduate with a law degree and go do that. Fortunately, it worked, and I still graduated with honors, so did well there. But things were going well enough that my wife was like, you know what, I think you should just keep doing the woodworking and YouTube, because it's going well enough, go for it. And her job, fortunately, her career absolutely took off. So she was like, you know what, hey, until this is really profitable, like, we're fine, I'm fine. And I think the big clincher was, she said, you know, the days I come home and you've been in the shop all day versus the days I come home and you've been at school all day, I like talking to you a lot more after you've been in the shop than after you've been at school. So if this is going to work, please, please do this instead of going to law. Like, we'll all be happier. It's like, cool, let's do it. And fortunately, you know,
thanks, willing, dear.
It's worked out. So here we are.
Like, thanks, dear. I appreciate it.
Yeah.
So did you retire from the Army or just do a stint?
No, I just did. I was in 6.5 years and then resigned my commission to get out.
So leaving the military, how did that feel?
Oh man, that's big. It was weird. It was definitely an adjustment period. It's one of those things, I knew it would hit me and then I thought it didn't. Then it hit me more than I thought it would in different ways. It's hard to explain. There's a lot you gain, a lot you lose after coming out of the military. I think it also depends on at what level you're involved. You know, I got out at 6.5 years. The one thing I really wanted to do in the military was have a company command, and I was offered that opportunity, but with what was going on in my personal life, was going through divorce and custody battle, and that was why I knew I needed to exit. I had to forfeit that opportunity to do the one goal I had. Fortunately, you know, my son lives with me all the time, so that was more important, made the right decision, and everything worked out. But yeah, going from someone with a whole lot of responsibility and title and a certain degree of respect that comes from certain badges and patches you get to wear from things you've done, to just, you know, no, nobody Caleb. Gives you crap. And there's not a commonality of values and morals and ethics and sense of responsibility and purpose and mission. It's a hard transition. Now I have a very insulated life in one way where I get to ignore a lot of things and just put my head down and do what I like to do, invite the people into my life that, you know, get along with. But there was definitely a transition period where it was tough realizing there's a whole lot of people very privileged to have a limited set of experiences that enables them to have a very narrow view of the human psyche and the world and, you know, what happens.
Most definitely. Yeah, it was hard for me when I came out.
Steve and I both retired from the Navy.
Oh, okay. Okay.
So yeah. We both spent 20 years. Good.
Yeah, I wasn't sure. So you absolutely understand then. It's
yeah.
And I kind of wanted to hear that because, you know, like you said, I dealt with a lot of the same things, that sense of purpose and mission that we all had, that we lived in that institution for so many years. And then to come out and try to find the next thing, you know, and for me, that was the YouTube and the maker community. I was on my last deployment watching guys like you and Brad Rodriguez and Bob Claggett on YouTube going, I think I can do that. And I came home and got my maker kid and we decided to do a YouTube channel, and the rest is history. And that was 2.5 years ago.
That's fantastic.
So, yeah. You started yours about the same time I started. Actually, I was a year after you, Scott. And I'm still pretty much exactly where I was a year and a half ago.
Hey, it's all about priorities. That's all.
Well, I mean, yeah,
things that you're dealing with.
I had a real job back then, and that I did not like it. The people were kind of okay. I mean, well, you guys both understand this. There are places that you've worked and places you've been stationed that you love the job, especially Scott, because he's been around. Just like I have. But I mean, there are places that you love the job. There are places that you love the people. There are places that you love the job and the people. And there are places that you hate the people and hate the job. And it just wears on you. And when I came out of the military, I went to college. I did everything backwards. Mm-hmm. I went to college, failed out, worked in a, not that this is my podcast or anything, worked in a warehouse for 5 years or something like that. wanted to get married to my girlfriend, but I knew that, you know, 575 or whatever the hell I was making, it wasn't much. And I'm like, I don't want to be that lower income. You know, I don't mind working hard for it, but I don't want to be living off Uncle Sam. It's just not my thing. And so I joined the Navy. Plus it was also the first Gulf War and, you know, blah, 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 and all that. So you came in for the second Gulf War, if you want to call it that. So, because you're a little bit younger than both of us, but you have less hair, which is
bad genes there. But yeah, I signed up when the Marines were storming Fallujah. Was when I signed for RTC and came in a few years later. But yeah, absolutely knew what I was gonna be heading into.
Yeah,
when I did.
Yeah, I did not. I just like, God, Dad, tell me a bunch of, you know, fun stories, and that was it. And then I got my own stories, and it's not a life for everybody. Let's put it that way. But it is nice. It is really strange when you come out and you still have that military mentality, and working with the state like I did, I was like, oh, it's a government and another government. That should be the same. Oh my God, they are not. You know, so I learned a lot of lessons that, and civilians don't do things militarily. I mean, my watches still have military time on it.
Yeah.
I'm super fortunate that because I retired, I have that safety net that the government provides you after you retire. So I'm able to make those mistakes. And I was able to jump into that YouTube thing without huge fears. You hear about these people that, like, they find that point where they quit their day job and they go YouTube full time or content creation full time. And I'm just like, that just terrifies the hell out of me that someone would do that.
And that Caleb, that's pretty much what you did, right?
I've got my VA disability safety net, mm-hmm. and of course a wife who works and is very successful. It helps too. But, mm-hmm. and you know, I'd been doing YouTube a year and a half before I moved into content and do it full time. Cause while I was in school, I test well, so I had a good bit of scholarship income coming in, and I was in law school on the GI Bill. Only way I recommend anyone go to law school is if someone else is paying almost all your way there. Otherwise, it just doesn't make financial sense.
Much.
And of course, they were paying me to go to. So it was a pretty decent paying, you know, job. Going to law school is the way I treated it. That was just my job. So did my best.
Well, because when you're in college and do under the GI Bill, you get E2's housing allowance.
E5.
I meant second class. But yeah, you get an E5's pay for housing. That helps a lot.
Yeah. Yeah. So I was getting, it's like $1,000 or $1,200. I think it's like $1,200 a month from them, which is tax-free, which is like making $1,600. And then, you know, my VA disability paycheck on top of that and the book allowance. And then I was cashing out the money the school was giving me in scholarship because government was paying for most of it. So a lot of that just got kicked back to me from other scholarships I've been awarded for testing well. So, yeah.
So you got into woodworking and started doing content creation. Now, were you doing the woodworking for content creation, or did you roll right into commission work and building furniture, and then that became content creation?
Yes. So I think the content started first, where I was doing a few videos on projects around the shop. And then I realized, you know, I need, because when you start YouTube, as you guys both know, all it is a giant time suck that makes you zero money. Still not sure how much money it actually makes me. It's not very much. Last year, well, I say that in jest. Last year was actually pretty good, but this year, I don't know what's going on. I've talked to a lot of people, and it is slumped hard. I'm about 30% on content revenue wise as I was just last year. And technically, you know, subscribers, followers, all that stuff is up a lot, but you know, views and revenue are down a lot. And
when did you start noticing the downtrend?
January, February, which there's normally an annual drop that happens beginning of the year, but in this year it hasn't been like a drop and a bounce. It's just been a continual down curve.
Okay. The reason that I asked is because the podcast was doing very well. We were up to almost 300 downloads a week.
Nice.
Yeah. And then all of a sudden it just bottomed out to, we lost 150 downloads a week. And I'm like, did I do something? Cause I have a problem with the, you know, what is it? What do you call that? Competence. So yeah. I'm like, what did I do? What did I say? You know, how did I lose them? And and so I reached out to a couple other people. And I'm like, there's always some kind of slowdown. You know, sometimes it could be because you had a big guest and it's just, you know, they bring their followers for that little bit. And then they go, you know what? I'm not going to listen to this dude anymore. I listen to my buddy and that's it. And they leave. And it was, so I was like, okay. But yeah, it shocked me. But it also coincided with the opening of the country.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's part of it, is people just have opportunity to do things they did before and they're embracing that more than they did before instead of staying home watching YouTube. So I don't know, it's good and bad. Like,
yeah,
I think I hate the views and revenue are down, but then I'm also like, you know what? I hope this is because people are going out, spending time with their friends and going to restaurants and supporting small businesses and going to events and not, you know, sitting on the couch with Cheetos watching YouTube, and not because they're just sitting on the couch watching Cheetos each and watching someone else instead. So
right,
it's really hard for me to compare my trend data because my first year was that building year, you know, just trying to get the initial foot ground. And then you can, if you look at my trend, you can tell when the pandemic started, because it was like right after WorkbenchCon and just everything just shot up. And then we went through that valley and then came back again. Went right back up again. And I think you're right. I mean, usually we get that that holiday slowdown, December, January, where people are spending time traveling with their families and stuff, so viewership goes down. But again, now we're in a year and I don't know. And then I had a viral video in May that just threw everything out the window, so I have no trend data. But it was like, I could see that slope you were talking about. There's just a giant mountain right in the middle of it. But I think I would have to agree with you too. We're hoping that people are getting back to life and stuff, and they don't depend on us as much anymore.
Yeah. So
exactly. We'll just write it out. And it's just a challenge for those who stick it out, learn, improve, do better, and find a way to attract the audience. Mm-hmm. And those who keep doing the same thing, don't get any better, might fall behind or get discouraged and quit, you know, might find new opportunity and do something else. It's just, we'll see. It's just hard knowing. It's hard knowing, like, oh, okay, is this an opportunity to seize and find the right way to pitch this? Or is this the beginning of the end? And those who jump ship and find the next thing are the ones that are ahead of the curve. There's just never any way to know which is the right move.
Right. Well, I was listening I was listening to I call it our sister podcast-ish, but it was Vincent and Ethan at Because We Make. And one of their last episodes, I finally caught up on everything they did. And so shout out to them for all the content that they put out. They were talking about, I think Vincent was saying something about some of the people with the slump that is happening, if they are relying solely on content for their bank, they're going to be hurting. Mm-hmm. They said, you need to use the, you know, YouTube as a supplement to your, you know, work. If you were strictly content creating, you better be Mark or Brad or April. You better be one of those, because if you're not, you're probably, you know, this may go away. We don't know, because everything got mixed up last year.
It's all about diversification of income. Got to have multiple revenue streams.
And spread everybody out. Talks about that right off the bat
Co-related as possible.
I think, you know, a lot of people that I just started YouTube just to get out of my head, like you wanted to, and it looked kind of fun, so I was like, what the hell. I never thought it would be, you know, a full-time gig for me at all. I never thought I'd be doing a podcast either, but I just would like to make things for friends and family, and, you know, maybe sell the occasional thing, or, you know, kind of like what Bruce does with his business. He sells to real estate agents. I thought, well, that could be kind of cool. That works. But so, Caleb, how do you feel about the trend? I mean, you're safe because you build wood. You build furniture out of wood and actually metal too. Mm-hmm. But
and epoxy and concrete and everything. Anything. Yeah.
Yeah. You put it all together. So do you find it that there's going to be a day, do you think there will be a day that you're like, the business is doing so well that I cannot do content anymore? I could still do the Instagram because it's kind of, you pull that up, but it's time consuming to just do one video from the whole five that I have.
I've spent a little bit of time thinking about that just because of how much revenue has dropped. Like I said, I'm probably down to shoot 25 to 30% of what it was just last year. But I don't want to give things up too quickly. I do have a pretty good sized audience. There are still people who, you know, watch and pay attention. I never know what's going to happen. So I just keep plugging away at it. I'll keep plugging away at it for a while longer. I mean, there's definitely going to be that tipping point where if things continue too long, and I don't know when that is, and I'm not close to it, I don't think, you know, I think the biggest rule in businesses in life is just always be ready to pivot, right? Pay attention to your KPIs and key performance indicators. And, you know, if things aren't performing and giving you a return on your investment, which isn't just money, it's also your time, time's your most finite resource. And you got to make sure you're putting those resources to things that give you the best return. Fortunately, you know, I've grown a multifaceted business with a degree of flexibility, all involving things I enjoy doing that take care of my family. So I can always, you know, shut down commissions and focus on content, or shut down content and focus on commissions, or in an ideal world, both do great. And what I'd love to do is have, you know, a dedicated shop staff and shop manager that can handle commissions and leave me free to make whatever videos I want, or be involved in the commissions and do videos on that. And that would kind of be a perfect world scenario for me. Don't know if we'll ever get there. It'd probably just be a balance right now. It's just, you know, me and my help, but, you know, just keep my eyes open.
You have children to, you know, to bring up and
yeah,
you know, they're slave labor right there.
Exactly. Pretty.
No, I mean, child labor, not slave labor. Oh,
well, you talked earlier, you had a couple of guys that were coming in and helping you out. I mean, are they full time, or are they just helping you out on some of the bigger projects when you need the extra hands?
They're part-time, regular schedule. Yeah. So not technically full-time hours. They've been at full-time hours before, but it just kind of depends on what's going on in their life. I had two for a while. I have just one now. I've had just one guy for quite a while who's my camera guy and extra set of shop hands just to speed up. And should have been doing a lot of large projects, a lot of things. You just need two guys to be moving stuff around. But yeah, he's on a regular schedule, so he's here all the time.
Okay, so you do have a full-time employee-ish.
Ish, yeah. But like, he's here like 20 hours a week right now, just because what other stuff he has going on. Sometimes he's been over 30, sometimes it's like 10, sometimes it's 20. It's just whatever he has going on. He keeps me up to date on how much he wants to be here. So
it's nice having that available to you. I mean, because I know there are days when I'm working on stuff and I'll be like, man, I really wish I had another hand to hold this or hold this camera for me.
Oh, yeah. And we were doing 5 days a week for a while, and it got to the point where I was like, I need you to not be here some, because, you know, I do content too, and I have so much crap that I need to just sit down and do on the computer, you know, that, you know, I wish we could just stay busy in builds, but we also need to do content on it. So I can't just have you in there working on it if we're not doing content, and I'm the face of the content. So I've got to be here, but I also, you know, need to get back to, you know, leads that have emailed in for quotes and do designs for potential clients and pitch ideas to sponsors and, you know, review video edits and make final tweaks and design thumbnails and get everything posted and write blog posts and do my books and record keeping and pay taxes and all the other things that, you know, go
into it.
You
and YouTube just track mileage, videos and put them online.
Oh no, all I do is, you know, get in my shop and just make things, and the magical internet fairies do everything else. All I ever do is make cool things in the shop and never touch a camera or do anything I don't like.
Man, I didn't know that. How do I get involved with that?
You do YouTube? That's easy. No, it's not. You spend probably twice as much time behind the camera as you do in front of the camera.
The dirty secret of career as a content creator is you're still a small business owner and entrepreneur. So every legal obligation that comes with being a small business owner is on you, except even more complicated because it's such a new industry. There's no established practices. Like when you look in the NAICS, you know, the big national code for what businesses are, there is no content creator. Mm-hmm. So it's like, well, am I a carpenter? Am I a furniture maker primarily making things out of wood? Or am I a video producer? Or am I an independent artist? I don't know. There's no content creator. There's no classification here for a guy who makes and sells things and sells ad spots on videos and photos he produces of making said things.
So you talked a little bit about working with sponsors and stuff. Do you feel that's a necessary evil, or you enjoy it as part of growing your business?
Both. I mean, it depends on if you want it to be profitable or not. Talk about, you know, getting back to diversification of income. As we mentioned, you know, YouTube as a source is extraordinarily fickle and unreliable. You know, you have the boom and bust where a few videos might be doing really well for a while and make you a good bit of money every month, and then a month later all that gets turned off and is not there anymore. So you need to have other ways to make income, which for me is, you know, also ad revenue based on my website. It's going and doing speaking engagements at conferences, working with sponsors who sponsor videos. You have a commonality of interests and values who are okay if, you know, every video isn't a banger. They're fine with that. They just want that association and, you know, to be able to repost your content and do stuff like that. So it's another source of income, as well as, you know, affiliate marketing, selling plans on things, commission work. Commissions are big for me, you know.
Really, how did you start this? I mean, I know you started YouTube and all that. So, I mean, so you got out of the military, you were watching a bunch of people on YouTube while you were stationed there, and then you had all these plans when you got out. How did it go from where you were to where you are now here almost 10 years later? I mean, what were I know it's a big thing, but, you know, some of the major steps that somebody maybe that is thinking to do something like this, you may be able to help them out.
Yeah. So just kind of abbreviate things, put a little bit of a timeline. 2012 was when I got back from Afghanistan, built my shop. 2014, I exited the military in later half of the year. And then I started working at the probate court as a clerk. Sold off most of my shop in that time. Was there for about a year. Fall of 2015, I started law school. And then it was about a year later, fall of 16, I was like, I need to get back in the shop. I got back in the shop, needed a miter saw station. Because I was working on my miter saw on the floors. Like, this isn't working. It's like, I need something to put this on. And then it hit me. It's like, well, Google and YouTube's a thing. I'll just go search one there and see if, like, someone's thought of this. And found April Wilkerson. And that's when I started watching YouTube from her. I found Jay Bates and Nick Ferry and just got sucked into that. Because it was like, oh, hey, when I can't get in the shop and make something, I'll just hop on YouTube and scratch that itch a little bit and get some ideas. And that was cool, and did that during some of my downtime at school between classes. And Jay Bates did a video about something, how much money I make woodworking or something like that. And I was like, okay, sounds interesting. And he's like, I'm not a woodworker. I've never made a dollar from woodworking. I'm a content creator, and kind of laid out how that business was. And I was midway through law school, and that's when I discovered it as a career path. And I was like, you know what? And it tickled everything I was interested in. And that's when I decided to give that a try. It's halfway through. And this was like, hey, if it works, it works. If it doesn't, I'll graduate with a law degree and do that. So then I started putting effort into it. Of course, it wasn't making me any revenue. It was just taking a bunch of time. It was kind of a hobby. And it was started with, I'm going to make a video or two and see if I even like the video process. Because I had enough sense to know, if I don't even like videos, there's no reason to go far with this at all. So let me just make a video or two. I did. I was like, that sounds fun. Or it was kind of fun because I'd never done it before. And it was like, you know, but I need a way for this to at least, you know, pay for some upgrades, some equipment, cameras, and better tools in the shop. So put feelers out to do some work. I signed up for a big, what do they call that? Craft show here in Memphis called the Cooper Young Festival. Went there with a few pieces, got a couple commissions from that, started my commission brand website. Cause I went there as You Can Make This Too. And I realized pretty quickly that You Can Make This Too doesn't sell, pay me a lot of money to do it for you very well. So the custom furniture guy was born, and I started did a DBA and doing business as for that, set up another website for that, and put a little bit of marketing dollars behind it. Went back to that show 2 more years as the custom furniture guy, got some more commissions, and now my website's been established enough, you know, with good keywords, and Google being the great thing that it is that uses geotagging knows I'm in Memphis. And when people are in my area and search custom furniture, the custom furniture guy is a good hit without having to put money behind it. And I get leads and do furniture. And when all the stars align, you know, someone wants me to build something and some other company wants to send me all the material for free, and it's cool enough, someone else might want to build it, so I can pay someone to make plans for me and I can record it. And there might be some other stuff I can throw into the project that someone wants to pay me to talk about in my video. And then I can put all that up on YouTube and, you know, get some ad dollars on a video that someone's paying me to talk about some stuff about a thing someone's paying me to build out of stuff people gave me that I can then sell plans for. And that's kind of when everything really comes together. You just, you know, gotta try to tie all the pieces together to make a living, because individually none of those is an income. But once you start tying all those things together, you can get to an income. And the good thing is there's almost always a couple of them that are doing really bad and a couple of them that are making a decent bit of money, and it just kind of balances out and floats. Just kind of try to keep my finger on the pulse of it to know where my time needs to be going and where my energy and resources need to be going to, you know, keep things moving along and keep my family fed.
It does seem like, oh, go ahead, Scott.
So I was going to kind of say, I kind of followed your plan that you were talking about, in the sense that I was getting out of the military and I was going to start a handyman business. And literally my handyman business was going to be my content. You know, people were going to pay me to build projects that I was going to film and put on YouTube.
Yeah.
And this may surprise you, but the government messed up my pay for 5 months. So I retired in May and didn't get my first paycheck until September.
That is okay. Utterly unsurprising.
So, yes, I know.
I am highly shocked.
So then I had to keep taking handyman jobs because I had to pay the bills. So then my business got so big that it tilted the wrong way. Now as a handyman that was trying to do YouTube, not a YouTuber.
There's no time to make content. Yeah.
Yeah. But I was very fortunate early on that a couple of my projects that I did that I filmed did really well, in the sense that I have made more in ad revenue and affiliate marketing off those videos than I ever did from the customer paying me to do the project on their home. And you know, and I'm talking 300, 400, 500% differences, you know? So, and like, you know, your organic content keeps going and building steam, whereas that project, what I did for that customer, was a finite period of time.
Exactly. That's one of the reasons I lean on the content is that passive income. You know, I prefer a business. I feel I hate chasing customers and worrying about sales and trying to project and make sure that the money's going to keep coming in month after month. You know, I like the passive side of knowing, oh, hey, on trend, this much in ads, this much in sponsors, this much in planned sales. And that's going to be there regardless of if the phone's ringing or not. Instead of having to be like, anyone email me today asking about a table? Did anyone email me?
We're picking up the phone like in the old days. Did you call me?
Fortunate enough that I've been able to tip that scale again. I took some time off this summer and went and worked a different job. And now I'm back. I'm just not doing as much handymanning anymore. And I'm getting that YouTube, that wheel is starting to move again. Yeah. You know, I'm like 4 weeks out from a video, which for me is, wow. I'm usually like 2 weeks at most, you know, but that organic contact, like I was telling Steve the other day, my channel did great in July and I didn't put out a video, and I'm like, okay, that's good. Cool. I'm happy with that. It's like my fifth best month and no content. Nice. So yeah, I understand where you're at, where you gotta find that nice balance where you're not depending on one or the other anymore. And that's where the happiness side comes in, right? The work-life balance.
Yeah, exactly.
And you don't feel bad about taking the weekend off and spending it with your kids or your wife.
That was actually one of my questions is, do you find that you have more time now, Caleb, with your family than you did when you were in the military, or, well, you were overseas in the military, but do you find that you can just go, you know what, I need a vacation, I'm going to take a vacation?
Yeah, that's one of the reasons I'm in this, is just so I would, you know, be able to, as you guys well know, you can't tell anyone about when you're going to be or that you'll be there or won't be there. That's just a hope and a wish.
Right.
There's zero assurance that you're ever going to, I mean, I just say, you know, I could never tell my wife when I'd be home for dinner, let alone if I was going to be somewhere on Saturday, like, come on. Whereas now I fully own and control my calendar, and that's the most powerful thing. And one of the reasons I did decide to do this instead of law, because even, you know, owning a firm, there's still quite a few other people who have a lot of say in your schedule. But running this, if I don't agree to it, it's just simply not on my calendar, which leaves me free to, you know, make assurances to my family that, you know, Thursday is the first day of school. So yeah, I'm going to drop you off and I'll be here when you get home. And, you know, we're going to take 10 days and go to Disney this summer, which we did. And, you know, we can book that 8 months in advance and that's no problem. And yeah. And then just with, we have a blended family, so I work around that. So it's not that I never work evenings or weekends, but I get to, if I do, it's normally because I took time off in the middle of the week to be where I needed to be. And I'm making that up, or it's just a surge time and, you know, might put in a 16-hour day and be out here till midnight to meet a deadline and hit the road. But on the flip side, you know, I might be taking a 3 or 4 day weekend once we get finished with the project and there's, you know, nobody's good graces I have to be into or worried about if the boss is going to be fair about that. Because I mean, I know he's a jerk and he's not going to let me, but it's all good.
Sometimes just spending that 15 or 16 hours in the shop, you get done and, you know, you're in that zone and you're like, wow, I've been out here since 7 o'clock this morning. You're like, turn off the lights and go in with a big smile on your face.
Yeah.
Because you're doing what you love.
Exactly. And, you know, work-life balance, just the idea of balance, everyone thinks that means everything, like, you know, floats out, but it's more a, it's the seesaw or the wheel. And you know, I love it. It works out well. Like I said, when I need to focus on family, I can do that. When I need to focus on the shop, I can do that. And you just kind of keep everything spinning so that you stay centered.
That is a good place for us to stop, to take a break, let our sponsors do their thing, and we'll be right back with You Can Make This Too's Caleb.
ID10T, come here.
Yes, Lord Perfidius.
I need you to find me a good quality cutting board and have it personalized. It's the Mrs. birthday.
Yes, sir.
The Mrs.? I thought that thing was burnt up.
I can read your mind, you know.
Right. Excuse me. I need to find a good quality cutting board for His Highness. Can you help me?
Don't know why you came all this way. All you had to do is go to www.vincentmferrari.com and there you can find the perfect something for His Highness.
Where is it again?
You're such an idiot. That's www.vincentmferrari.com, where his motto is custom for everyone.
Honey bun, I'm home. I went to Ferrari's.
That's www.vincentmferrari.com. Once again, that's www.vincentmferrari.com.
What do you want me to do?
And we're back.
And we're back.
Guys,
Steve, you have any announcements?
I have a bunch of announcements. Not really announcements, but we do want to thank people for supporting us here on Makers Figuring It Out. And they are as follows: Jeff, a weird guy on Buy Me a Coffee. Also, Tony Langer from Langer Works and David over at First Do Woodworks. They all sponsor us on Buy Me a Coffee. So we thank them for it. And then over there on Anchor, we have Vincent and Marion sponsoring us there. And we really appreciate it. Without them, the show would be more expensive for us. Because you know, it takes money to make money. But any kind of any donations or whatever, you know, sponsorships that you guys throw at us, we will put right back into the show to keep it more content. You know, I'm talking, you know, maybe giveaways and things like that. And speaking of giveaways, if you are listening to this and you still wanted to join the Raise the Bar Challenge, thank you for, you know, all your effort, but it was closed Saturday. So But I think we had four entries, so that wasn't bad. I was hoping for more. I was a little disappointed, but then again, people started. We were, you know, discussing earlier that lag, that dip. So maybe that's the reason people are getting back to work, you know, or hey, I don't have time for this. I actually have a lot of orders, or I'm going on vacation, or whatever the excuse. And there's one more way that you can support us, and that's on Teespring. We have a concert shirt that basically says everybody that was here on the first year, the first 52 episodes, and then we're going to do one next year. And then we also have a Get Lathe t-shirt out there. I think it's pretty cool. And also a Get Hammered. So if you guys could do that. And if not, just if sharing the show actually helps a lot, I would say going to click a like, but actually you can click a like because we are now going to be on YouTube. Maybe a day or so after we release, I'll put it on YouTube. So we're still working the kinks out of that. So basically it's the same dang show. It's just on YouTube. We reach a different audience there. So we're just trying to help the building or the business-ish, whatever we call this. So we're back with Caleb. Thanks for sending through all my banter there. You know how it works, Caleb. You got to, you know, people donate. Got to
pay the bills.
Got to pay the bills.
Are too familiar. Yes, sir. Take care of everyone who takes care of you.
That is right. And I do. I think we do. I think we do a pretty good job of letting them know. And if you haven't listened, Caleb, because I know you're a busy man, so I don't expect everybody to listen to the show, but I did like two little Star Wars things for Marion and Vincent. Just little stupid things. I'm working on another one that, let's put it this way. It's a classical story, but I'm throwing all our sponsors' names in as the protagonists. So
that's awesome.
You know, so it'd be like, you know, maybe Romeo and Juliet, and we'd put, you know, Marion with Tony. And, you know, and then everybody else would be filled in. And you know, I think it's just kind of fun and also educational. So, you know, our commercials would be fun and educational. But if you haven't heard some of the classics, then you need to go read some stuff. Because, you know, Caleb, your kids are old enough. I was going to say they're old enough to be in school. How old is your oldest one?
He is 8 and about to start 3rd grade, and my younger one is 6 and moving into 1st grade.
Well, actually, that might work because I think that's when I started learning how to, that's when you start to learn how to write. And I had my cousins over, and I know the people that have listened to this, I'm sorry, but I still find it amazing. My cousins are over helping me put my shop together and insulate it and, you know, do all the things that I can't do because I'm fat. And it's just easier with that. And I'm helping them out, keep them off the streets and, you know, whatever. Yeah, and they kind of, for some reason, they like coming over, which I find out is really weird. But they picked up a box the other day. And they're like, Steve, what does this say? And I, you know, look at them like, it's an address. He goes, who's it to? And I'm like, you can't read this? And they're like, no. I mean, we could read some of it, but not all of it. I went, seriously? He goes, yeah, they don't teach cursive writing anymore. And your kids are in, you know, that's in public school. So I don't know the, you know, where your kids go or not, but be prepared for that. There's no in public schools anymore. There's no cursive writing. So when your kids get old enough, you and your wife can actually write notes back to each other in cursive, and they will have no idea that you're telling them that they're both going to boarding school.
It's pretty awesome.
I know. It's weird.
The military burned me out of cursive because everything's in block letters on logbooks and stuff. Mm-hmm.
Yes. Yeah. That's one of those things to think about, because I've seen all kinds of hate on Facebook about it. But like, you know what? Once my kids have a good grasp on this, I could probably in like 30 minutes teach them what they need to know to be able to read cursive. It's like, there's not that many letters that are very different.
Different. No.
And all things being equal, I think like spending extra time in typing class will prepare them for their future far more than any minutes in school on cursive, because I don't think I've ever written cursive since my mom made me when I was in school and had to learn how to write cursive. I don't think I've ever written cursive after that because I didn't like it. I thought it was stupid.
It's like, if you have to write it now, it's almost like a chore because you're like,
yeah, the only cursive I use is my signature. It's the only time I've ever done it. And you know what? I can teach, anyone can learn how to sign your name in cursive in 5 minutes. But you know how to write it, like whatever.
Well, I guess I'm an old fart because I do. Well, I've merged the two. Now it's cursive and printing.
Gotcha.
You know, it's kind of like when I was in California stationed out there, I was in a Walmart or something like that. And there was this couple and they're walking down, you know, the aisle, and not that I was listening but you can't help hearing something. And then I heard something different. They went from English straight to Spanish without missing a beat. And then came back to English. And I was like, wow, what the hell is that? And my wife, my girlfriend at the time told me, she goes, that's called Spanglish. So I don't know what cursive and you know, block letters would be called. Who knows?
It's called Steve.
Yeah, I like that. We got Caleb sized and we got Steve writing.
Yeah, Steve writing. Yeah.
Yep. I just came up with new font.
Of course, when I think about it, I don't even write by hand anymore much. Like, I'll do sketch and dimensions. I write numbers a lot, but if I need to like jot a note, I throw it in my phone because, you know, like when I was in the military, I carried a pad and pencil, but then I just started using my phone because, you know, iPhone became a thing while I was in. And since I've got out, it's like, I don't wear a watch or carry a notepad or pencil. I just stick it in my phone. And the nice thing is I'm an Apple guy too. So if I put in my phone and then I'm on my laptop, guess what? My notes right there. And then when I go in my office and sit at my iMac, my notes right there too. So everywhere I go. And then when I'm at the store and I pull out my phone, whatever I wrote when I was at my laptop or at my iMac or on my phone on the couch, it's right there. And some of them are shared with my wife. So wherever the in the world she is, she has it too. You know, it's like
technology.
So yeah,
the world we live in.
Like, I almost never, like that said, when I'm in the shop and I've got to like figure out dimensions of things, I do a lot of 3D modeling, but I prefer to do that on pencil and paper. A lot of times I'm like, oh, hey, this is the size of this carcass. So this is the drawer. Here's the insets. Let me like neck everything down and figure out how wide the front and back panel have to be and the side panels and stuff. I prefer to do that on paper, but that's just lines and numbers. If I have to write anything, it's normally.
So if you design anything, if you design anything, do you do a sketch of it real quick or do you actually just get into Fusion or whatever software you use to start drawing?
It depends. A lot of commission work, I do Fusion because I'll do renders and send renders to the client to make sure we're on the same page. And if I'm doing plans, I'll normally do Fusion and send that to my plans guy and then he converts it to SketchUp because he prefers SketchUp. But if it's for me, yeah, I'm sorry. Was there like in my voice for that?
No, that was just, that's just weird that he go from Fusion to SketchUp.
That's what you're comfortable in. That's what you're comfortable
in.
Yeah,
that's what,
it's what he prefers. I'm like, cool. I like your plans. So, you know, you do it your way, man. Saves me the time. And if I'm just doing something for me, if it's one of those things where I need to solve the design is what I call it. Like, I'm not quite sure because, so I'm going to answer a question you haven't asked, which is one of those questions I get a lot when people say, so when did you feel like you're a maker, you're a woodworker, you got this figured out, you know what you're doing? It's like,
I haven't figured it out yet.
I don't know. And one of the reasons I don't know, and I still don't feel like I've got it figured out, is every time I do a build. So it's like, oh, build some for yourself. So it'll just be nice and easy. It's like, well, no, because I have these crazy ideas. And if no one wants to pay me to make it, well, then that's what I make for me. So every time I build something, it's something I've never made before. And there's normally some element of something like crazy I thought up that I've never tried and I don't know if it's gonna work or not, and it always takes a bunch of solving. Like last week I was up in Rhode Island at Narwhal Labs from Total Boat, big sponsor of mine, and we did a table. I think I've got a few pictures, and I did this crazy metal base for it that I'm super happy with how it came out, but I'd never done a base like that before with a lot of compound angles, and they had no saws that could cut compound angles on metal. So that was a lot of fun to figure out. But then we got it together, and as I was welding it together, they're like, this is really cool. So do you do a lot of stuff like this? Is this like a common design? I was like, I've never made anything like this, man. I don't know if this is going to work, but that's like every build I do. I don't know. I thought it was a cool idea. I wanted to do something like this. So I figured we'd give it a try. You got a few things I don't have. Seemed like it might make it easier. I don't know. So it's one of those, like, if I have a design and I know, oh, I need to work through and I need to make sure this is going to look good before I go start cutting stuff, then I'll model it. But if it's something that, you know, say a chest of drawers or something, or a table or something pretty typical, or a subcomponent of something, like I might model the exterior of something, but I'm not going to take time to like model all the drawer components. So then when I'm in the shop and I'm like, oh, so what size does the side of this drawer need to be, or what size does this shelf need to be? If I didn't fully model all that, which there, oftentimes there's a lot of little details I won't, that's when I break out, you know, pencil and paper. And I much prefer to do that by hand and just be like, okay, if this is the size and the gap has to be this size and the material is this thick, then you just, and to me, it's like algebra. I call it solving. Like, you have to solve for it, because it's not like you have to decide it. It's decided. You just have to, you know, work down through the dimensions to figure out what that number is.
I think I just like that when I'm, you know, I always do math, most math, higher math. I do most higher math on a pad of paper instead of in a calculator, just because I could see all the numbers. It's kind of like it's peripheral, but in a calculator, it's just a straight line. The way I do it, it's not. So it makes more sense when you do it on paper. But there are things that much easier when you put them in the calculator.
Yes, for sure.
I like using, I have a spiral notebook with the grid paper, the graph paper.
I have stacks of graph paper around here.
You know, it's like when I can see that paper, quarter inch square, and then, okay, that's how this can look. The other thing that I really like doing is blue painter's tape. Like, I'll literally just, like, if you go out to my workbench right now, there's like literally the outline of this project I'm working on in blue painter's tape, so I could see it in space. You know what I mean? The dimension of it, and you can rip the tape up and move it over. And it's like you said, you know, kind of modeling it, putting on a piece of cardboard or a piece of plywood or something to get a feel for what it is. So yeah, I'll go through rolls of blue tape just doing that.
I was thinking that that just today. It's like, you know, the makers of that blue tape, they must be making a mint on makers.
Mm-hmm. Because love that stuff all the time.
I mean, we use it as clamps. You know, you use it so you don't blow out the bottom end of it. You know, it's just, it's so versatile. And that stuff ain't cheap, though.
One of my favorite tricks is using it to lay out joinery, especially on walnut. Because if you, like on walnut, it's really hard to see pencil marks. But if you just put wherever you're going to cut everything on painter's tape, and then, you know, make your pencil marks and come back with a straight edge and a razor knife or marking knife, and you do score lines, then you can just peel out that tape and you have like the most visible, hardest line ever to then, you know, work your saw blade up to, or your chisel, or whatever you're doing. Like, talk about super high vis.
I don't know why, but that just blew my mind.
Yeah.
Never.
Yeah, because I don't know, like, and even on maple or any wood, like if I'm doing some really tight joinery, I'll lay out blue tape and then do all my marks, cut it, and then pull it away, because yeah, it's just the most defined line you can have.
It does make
sense. Some materials it helps with blowout and stuff too.
Yep.
Yeah, but I mean, are all tapes equal?
No,
I didn't think so. I mean,
does anybody actually use the old yellow masking tape anymore?
I've seen a couple. Actually, I've seen a lot of that on the videos from like Russia.
Mm-hmm. Sometimes I spring for the green tape.
Oh,
yeah.
That's good stuff. See, that's when you know you're
right there. Yeah.
That's when you know you're successful. You get the green stuff.
And now you're paying $10 a roll instead of $3 a roll. But if you're actually doing painting, though, that green tape, oh man,
yeah,
use
red tape for painting.
Yeah, but yeah, that blue tape, I'm like, blue tape manufacturers. Blue tape. It's kind of like the sticky notes back in the day. Mm-hmm. Whoever came up with that idea.
Yeah.
But So I think, gentlemen, we've hit that time of the show that we're going to do it again. It seemed like it was very successful last week. I got one whole comment, or actually two whole comments on it. So we're going to try it again. And that was the segment. I think I don't want to pretty much we did last week, Caleb. We did Never Have I Ever. And we actually had a lot of fun. We had a little banter after that. And it was just, it's a way to get to know a maker or somebody without being very formal, if you know what I mean. And you get to have a lot of fun at it. So basically what we're going to do, our friends that are listening to us, if you got a second, you know, just jot down a check mark and you follow along with us. And why don't you put your number on our Makers Figuring Out Instagram page. And we'll have a little fun. See what Caleb has and Scott has done or hasn't done. So from there, I'm just going to start. So if you have done it, make a check. If you haven't, no check. So, and I have 89 of these, and I'm not going to do all 89. But I randomized. Yeah.
Yeah.
I randomized. I like that one. So they're not the same as they were last week. So, gentlemen, are we ready?
Ready.
Yes, sir.
Okay. Never have I ever read a book in an entire day. Never have I ever toilet papered someone's house. Never have I ever kissed my best friend. Never have I ever been to Mexico. Never have I ever stolen anything. Played strip poker.
That changes things.
Yeah, it does. Never have I ever cheated on someone. Never have I ever gone commando. Never have I ever lost a bet. And if you haven't, I don't know what to say about you, but you're special. Never have I ever used a dating app. Never have I ever broken a bone. Never have I ever been to a psychic. Never have I ever told my parents I was staying at a friend's house, but really was somewhere else. And I think this one's the last one. Let me check. Yep. I'm not going to use this one because it was the same as last week. Never have I ever eaten whipped cream straight out of the can.
Every time.
Have you lived? If you haven't done that, go buy whipped cream and do it.
Do it.
It is. That's like a thing in our house, actually, with the grandkids and stuff. It's like, that's the treat.
Yeah. Oh, that's funny.
Like, yeah, your childhood sucked if no one's ever sprayed whipped cream in your mouth for you.
My cousin does that.
And your adulthood was really good if someone's done that.
Never mind.
Whoa. Too far. And we're not going to mix those things.
Never have I ever used whipped cream inappropriately. All righty. So let's see. Got all 15. Gentlemen, your numbers, as always, we will let our guest go first. Caleb, never have I ever done. How many?
Eight.
Wow. I'm not sheltered. I don't know what to say. Goody two shoes over here. Scott?
11.
11. Okay.
We just learned a lot about Scott.
Right, well, I am the badass of the group because I got 12.
And Steve. Wow,
the Navy does that to you.
Yeah. It's not many people have been to Mexico, so I'm like,
I used to live in San Diego.
I've been to like 22 countries, but not Mexico.
Yeah. Yep. So I don't know. Gentlemen, are you capable of saying which ones you have done? Or are you willing to say
haven't done?
So
never used a dating app.
I have.
I'm too old. And I've been married for 25 years.
Nope, that's me.
Me neither. That was a little bit after my time. Mm-hmm. I will say I'm married to my best friend and I kiss her every day. So there we go.
So, oh, isn't that sweet?
Points. Listen, she's not going to listen to this.
Kissed girls that were my friend, but all of my best friends were men.
It's okay now.
You didn't answer the question.
Okay, the question is no.
It is. Okay. Oh, shit. Mine's actually 13. Well,
my best friend is now my wife, and I have kissed her. Yes.
So I don't think they're talking. I don't think that's the question, but
no, I don't think that was the question either.
No, I mean, but see, it doesn't specify. So it doesn't specify on the lips, on the forehead, on the cheek. You know what I'm saying? So
that's true. True.
You know, I'm just going to take that as a. We'll just go with that. Actually, no, I have kissed my best friend who was a girl. Wonder if it's, maybe I should change that to current best friend.
Yeah. You're overthinking this, Chief.
I really am. That's what I do, man. We already talked about Mexico. Has anybody stolen anything?
That's how you survive in the military.
You're like, do you see my government pen?
They say there's only one thief in the military. Everybody else is just trying to get their stuff back.
Exactly.
Yeah. I'm not going to confirm nor deny if I stole anything from the military. Never have ever played strip poker. Yes. No, maybe.
Nope.
Scott. They can't see. We're on a podcast. They can't see you nodding.
I love the 80s.
Pretty much the girls wouldn't go any further than the top, though.
Well.
It's like, well, man, you take all the fun out of it. So have I ever been cheated on? Of course.
Yep.
Have I ever cheated on someone? But, yeah, once.
High school was high school.
Gone commando. Yeah, we're in the military.
I was in the army. Like
we were in the military, you know.
I'm pretty sure I didn't wear boxers for like 4 years.
Yeah. Ever been to a psychic?
No.
That's one of the ones that I haven't done. Mm-hmm. Told my parents I was staying at a friend's house when I wasn't.
I did that, and I went to Washington from California. Wow. I was gone for 3 days.
Wow.
Yeah, I lived in the middle of the woods. There really wasn't anyone around. We didn't go have overnights or anything. So it was never a...
No, that's why he's so smart. He has all that time to, you know, study and be studious.
Where did you grow up, Caleb?
Tennessee.
Okay. So you didn't go far.
No. Nah. Well, I mean, I bounced all around for a while, but then kind of came back to a different part, a few hours away from where I lived, but yeah, or grew up.
And the last one was, have you ever been hungover? We already know Scott.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. But,
I don't think you asked that earlier, but yeah, totally.
Yeah, that was right. Yeah. Yeah.
You may have skipped that one.
Yeah, I skipped that one, I think.
But
it was the I skipped that one for eating whipped cream straight out of the can.
Okay, yeah, that one. Oh, yeah.
That was one. Yeah. Totally. You don't do that, man. You're just.
A better one would be, have you ever eaten an entire can of whipped cream?
No, oh yeah,
but I've wanted yes. to.
Yeah.
So when I was a little kid, you know, remember whipped cream was a treat, Ready Whip and Cool Whip are two totally different things.
Oh yeah,
yeah.
And my parents would like go out to dinner or something. I'm like, I'm gonna eat all the Cool Whip, and you open that tub and you get about 4 scoops into it, and you're like, this is disgusting.
Like there needs to be some pie under this.
It's like not good straight.
You know what I did to it? I would freeze it. I don't know how. And then it kind of tastes like kind of like ice cream, but not exactly. It was, it was kind of like a puff frozen pastry or something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like a frozen eclair.
It's hard to describe. It's its own thing.
Yeah. It's its own thing. Yeah. And that's what I would do.
It's like a bad meringue.
No wonder I'm like I am now. All that crap. But that was fun. I enjoyed that one.
Yeah, that was a good
time. That was fun.
Yeah, it gets we get to know everybody. All righty, gentlemen. So I think that is what we call a wrap. Because Caleb's yawning.
Yeah.
I already got a nap, so we're good.
Yeah, no, West Coast. It's like 7 o'clock.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, it's like 9 o'clock here.
That's right, because Caleb's in. Yeah, I'm central. You're central. Yep. Because Nashville is in central also. Mm-hmm. Yeah, somewhere between. Yeah,
just a little bit past Nashville is eastern.
Yep. Just yeah, I was in that part of Tennessee. So, all right, gents. So, Caleb, where may we find? Oh, yeah. Sorry, completely forgot. Is there anybody you want to shout out this week, Caleb?
Me?
Yes.
Shoot, I wasn't prepared for this.
Neither was I, and I completely.
Shoot, yeah, I'll shout out somebody. I don't know if this is cool. Maybe this makes me a sellout, but Narwhal Labs. So I was up there last week. It is the makerspace attached to Total Boat, which is an actual makerspace in Bristol. So if you're around there and you need a place to go make stuff, they're fully equipped. But they've got a handful of guys working there that is just an amazing crew. So I got to hang out with them for a week. So that's kind of top of mind. Of course, they're working on growing out their following and putting out content for everybody. And I think it's a very awesome thing. And I love that Total Boat is putting as much resources as they are into just making content for folks, and have several people hired full time doing this for their careers and making the space open to the public for such a ridiculously low price. Memberships are like $20 a month or something. And I've got like a full metal shop, full wood shop, multiple CNCs, 100-watt laser, several 3D printers, the new crazy resin printers that like pull things out of the resin upside down just magically. It's amazing. And I want to see more companies do stuff like that and support people doing that and make content for people and open these spaces up. So Narwhal Labs, they're on YouTube and Instagram. Please go check them out.
And where are they located?
They're in Bristol, Rhode Island.
Okay. Cause I was thinking,
and they do really good entertaining videos too. They do it well. So this isn't just like, oh, you know, I work with them a lot. So go check out the people I work with. Like, I got to hang out with these guys for a week and go out to dinner with them every night and hang out with them and go sailing with them and chat and get to know each other.
Right.
And they're just people making really, really cool content, doing cool things, trying to take care of their community. And I think that's awesome. And I want more corporations to support that too. So if we want corporations to keep doing cool things like this, we got to, you know, make it worth our while. So go give them a follow.
That's great. Scott, do you have anybody?
So I want to call out Surf Prep Sanding, you know, another company out there that's kind of coming into our makerspace. They make sanders like Merca or Festool.
Go Merca.
A little bit on the high end, but at the same time, at a price point that your average guy can afford. You know, their average sanding system is about $575. It's a great sander. I got one on a recommendation from Drew Fisher from Fisher Shop, and they're really doing a lot for our community and they're engaging with people in the community and inviting them. They just had a booth at the AWFS show in Vegas, and we're calling out all these makers and stuff, and I have their sanding system and I just love it to death. I hate the fact that I waited as long as I did to get it, you know, and everybody that switches from one of your standard like DeWalt's or Bosch's up to a sanding system like Merca, Festool or Surf Prep, you say the same thing. Why did I wait so long? The ease of use and then the quality of the work that thing puts out is just awesome. So if you don't follow Surf Prep Sanding or you haven't looked at their products, maybe you should, because it's probably in your market and in your wheelhouse for at that price point.
Okay, so I have a stupid question. So what makes the Festool or the Merca or the Surf Pro, their Surf Prep?
Yeah.
What makes them so, I mean, obviously they're low profile and they have their own vacuum. And they have their own vacuum system.
Everything.
Yeah.
But it's
they sand faster. They don't rattle your hand off. Your hand doesn't buzz forever. There's not a cloud of dust coming out around the vacuum actually works. You don't get near as many swirl marks. The abrasives work better. Big thing is the vibration and noise. Mm-hmm. Like with my Merca setup, I have the vacuum and the sander. There can be someone standing beside me and we can carry a conversation at slightly louder than normal volume, slightly louder. Like my kids can be in the shop while I sand and I can talk to them and I'm not worried about what they're breathing or having to be like, what? Talk louder. The vacuum's on, you know, or I'm sanding.
Well, that's going to be my shop.
That's me faking, you know,
it's
yelling.
Just
it's yeah. And your hand doesn't hurt afterwards. And it just works better. And especially on the Merca, the center of gravity is a lot lower. So you just have so much more control and finesse over it. And then the speed adjustments work better. It's kind of like a track saw almost. You know, people like to crap on them. Like, oh, this does the job. You just need a straight edge until you use it. And then you're like, whoa, I can never go back now. Now I have to spend the money. I have to have this. It really does change things. Because it just does. And if you don't get it, it's because you haven't done it.
Mm-hmm. It's, yeah.
Trying not to make that's food the best analogies. Way to put it.
Yeah.
I mean, because my old sander from DeWalt, it failed, but it was probably 20 years, maybe. So I was thinking about going to a Ryobi because that's the battery system that I've decided to go with. But the Ryobi was too high. When you put the battery in everything and it's just like it's like the claw. And then I've seen the Mercas and the Festool and I was like, they're low profile. And so I got one that was electric powered that was kind of like that. But when I actually sanded, it didn't feel as nice as I thought it was going to. So, but maybe they'll have
DeWalt and Bosch make more, you know, that low profile hand sander, but yeah, these people, I mean, Surf Prep, they cut their teeth in the surfboard industry.
Right.
So, you know, dust collection is everything.
Everything in there.
It's all fiberglass and epoxy. Fiberglass. And
right.
Yeah.
Well, but the one thing that I did like is I got before I moved up here, I got a bunch of the mesh sanding paper. Mm-hmm. That stuff is a godsend.
Game changer, yeah.
Yeah, that
I get really annoyed whenever I go somewhere and I have to use something other than Merca.
Right.
Like when I was up at Narwhal, they have a bunch of Festool equipment and Festool sanders, which I was like, ooh, Festool sanders.
And you're impressed. Like,
after leaving my Diros at home, I mean, yeah, it's a great sander. At least it wasn't, you know, your big box store pickup, but I like my Merca better. And from what I've heard, and just looking at them, Surf Reps seem pretty similar. So I can't say anything good or bad. I haven't used one yet.
They're probably all in cahoots with each other so they can. They can get that rivalry going, you know, kind of like the Canon and Nikon.
Well, you know, a smart company sees what their competitors are doing, you know, and tries to break into that niche, you know. So, yeah, I'm pretty happy. I couldn't afford a Merc. I saw the Merc at Workbench Con last year, and I was like, this thing's beautiful. They're like, yeah, it's $1,500. Not that beautiful.
I mean, it's the whole setup, but
yeah,
it's nice when you have it.
Yeah,
I mean it's even nicer definitely. When they send it to you, but yeah.
Well, and the difference between you and me, I mean, this is what you do for a living.
Yeah,
you know, you absolutely that's what you do for a living. So you need to have those tools that are going to be efficient and they're going to provide good results because sanding twice as long is not an option.
Exactly. Yeah, and that's the other thing is like just the amount of less time you spend in sanding, and. Let me see. I did a profile with Schelix cutter heads because I put a Schelix in my thing. And they asked that, like, you know, well, obviously it's a pro shop, you know, awesome. But, you know, for a hobbyist, do you think this is worth it for a hobbyist? And I was like, I think it's worth it for a hobbyist for all the same reasons. Because if you have, you know, a helical cutter head instead of a straight knife cutter head, all you're doing is getting a much better finish and saving a whole lot of time on sanding. And obviously as a hobbyist, you don't have the same amount of time in the shop. So when you get in the shop, do you want to be, you know, moving the creation forward and spending the time on the romance of making or hours and hours sanding? Like, obviously, if you don't have the funds, you don't have the funds. That's fine. There's plenty of other ways to get there. You'll just spend more time sanding. But if you have the resources and you can make the upgrade, yeah, make the upgrade. Spend the time so that way when you're out there, with the limited time you have, you can spend it doing the thing you want to do instead of the thing you hate doing, because who loves sanding?
Yeah.
And, or just same thing as a pro shop. And I go nuts because I get those comments all the time, as anyone does on YouTube. It's like, oh yeah, you can make this too if you have a $10,000 worth of equipment. And most of the time I can be like, you know what? A drill, circular saw, router. Tell me what you can't do in this project. And yeah, I'm kitted out and I'm very fortunate and I'm very aware of that. I'm also out here 8 hours every day cranking out commissions, and this is my living. So it makes sense to me to drop $1,000 on a tool that might make a 4-hour task take 2 hours, because that's just
time is money now.
Do it 10 more times and it's paid for itself. After that, it's just making me more money. So yeah,
but you didn't start
a lot invested in my tools. Yeah, exactly. And I didn't start that way. I made a whole lot of things with a really crappy tool set. And then you know what? I took that money and I bought more tools, because I don't watch sports and I don't go golfing and I don't care what I drive and I don't gamble and I don't smoke, and you know, I drink at home. This my money goes in my shop. It doesn't go anywhere else. So
what do you got, an 8?
Yeah, exactly. No, yeah, we had a woodworking, we put some more woodworking stuff on there. I'm gonna
Have I ever done a complex dovetail? Yes.
Yeah. Have you ever hand cut dovetails? Have you ever hand cut dovetails on an angle? You know, have you ever hand sawed? Have you ever chiseled, mortise chisel? Have you ever done a wedged through tenon? Yeah.
Nope. So, nope. I'd be like, none.
Yeah. So, Steve, what's your
show? Have you ever sanded for more than 8 hours in a day?
I can't say that I've done that. My shout out is he's not a new guy, but it's what the hell is his name? Crying out Jiminy Crickets. It's Brandon Walker from Walker Woodworks. Mm-hmm. He just went full time.
Yeah, I saw that. Congrats to him.
So I wanted to you know, shout out to him and congratulations. It's got to be scary, but it's also, well, Caleb, you would know. You would know exactly how he feels. Liberating and scared as hell.
Scary.
Yep. Liberating and scared as hell. Yes. I like that. So, but that's my shout out to Caleb over there. So Caleb, thanks for coming out tonight. Really appreciate it. Scott, any departing words of wisdom?
I don't have any, but yeah, thanks again, Caleb. It was a blast chatting with you. You know, you probably don't even remember. We chatted a little bit at WorkBenchCon, and you know, me and the other 500 people that were there talking to you.
Yeah, and, I do.
Yeah. I look forward to seeing you again in February at WorkBenchCon. And I'll be one of those 20 people that are still following your channel.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me, guys. It was a lot of fun.
No problem. Well, should we call this quits?
Hey, Caleb, where can we find you on the internet?
Hey, yeah. Thanks, man.
Yeah. On the internet, you can find me anywhere under You Can Make This Too, all spelled out. So Instagram, YouTube, Facebook, You Can Make This Too, TOO. And my website, you can find me at youcanmakethis2.com or ycmt2.com. Both of them will take you to my webpage.
Awesome. I forgot what's going on. Scott, where can we find you?
You can find me at dadityourselfdiy on Instagram, TikTok, and YouTube.
Yep, and I'm just on Instagram and YouTube at Wolf Woodworking Creations. And that's also where you can find the podcast for this show, or the audio for this show is on my YouTube channel. So, well, if that's it, gentlemen, I'm going to take us home. So here at Makers Figuring It Out, it is our mission to educate, motivate, and inspire. And we hope we've done that for you today. So this is Steve and Scott.
This is Scott.
And Caleb, reminding you to keep learning, keep being motivated, keep getting inspired, and keep figuring it out. And we will catch you guys on the flip side, or next week, whatever that means. Bye.
Bye.